Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive. This time, we've got some pretty interesting stuff to go over. Someone sent us this ebook called Financial Planning Has Failed by Kim Butler and Kate Phillips.
Okay.
And it seems like, you know, our listener is really trying to look for information that kind of goes beyond just the typical Wall Street advice.
Yeah. And this book, it really does take a very different approach.
It does.
What I found really striking was, you know, learning about the author's background. Kim Butler, she was actually a financial planner.
Wow.
And she got to a point where she felt like what she was doing wasn't right. She actually reached out to her past clients and said, hey,
wow,
you know what? I was wrong.
That's pretty amazing.
It takes a lot of courage to do that. It shows you that she's really committed to helping people find a better way, you know, to manage their money.
Yeah. She talks about how the traditional approach to financial planning relies on so much guesswork. And I think that's what's so interesting about it. Like, she's like, hey, you know, you're trying to predict retirement age and market returns and future costs, like
decades in advance.
Yeah, decades in advance. It's like almost impossible to do that accurately.
Yeah. It's like you said, you know, try and build a house on sand.
Right.
It's just not a solid foundation. And you're setting yourself up for a lot of potential problems if you rely on those assumptions, because
for sure,
life happens, you know? And things change.
Yeah, you can't predict what the market's going to do. And she really emphasizes this whole thing about risky investments being overemphasized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stocks and mutual funds. It's just like this everybody's doing it mentality. But, you know, that doesn't necessarily make it the smart thing to do.
No, it doesn't. And she even points out that even the professional fund managers, a lot of times, they don't even beat the market.
That's right.
So are we really gaining that much more by taking on more risk, or are we just kind of playing a game we're likely to lose?
Yeah, that's a great question. And she goes on to talk about the target date funds, which, you know, a lot of people think those are really safe and simple. But
yeah, they sure.
She points out they can actually leave your retirement pretty vulnerable.
Especially
if there's like a downturn or something unexpected happens.
Yeah, like 2008, that really kind of showed everybody how those target date funds can really backfire on you, because you're just following a formula and you're not really in control and things happen you don't expect.
No. And then she gets into fees.
Don't even get me started.
I know, it's crazy. She said that fees can actually eat up over half of your retirement savings.
It's shocking. People don't realize how much Wall Street is taking from them.
I know.
Even when the returns are just kind of so-so.
Right. And she is really critical of these qualified plans, like the 401ks. Because, yeah, you get a tax deferral, but then it also limits your options.
Yeah.
And it gives the government and your employer a lot more control over your money, which is a little scary when you think about it that way.
Yeah. I mean, that tax deferral might sound good now, but what if tax rates go up when you retire?
Right.
You might end up paying more in the long run.
Yeah.
And plus, your money is kind of locked up in that plan.
It is.
What if you need it for an emergency or something?
Right. And then
you don't have easy access to it.
She doesn't let the banks off the hook either.
No.
She's like, hey, if you keep your savings in a bank account, especially in this low interest rate environment we're in, with inflation going up, it means your money's just slowly losing its value.
It's true. It's like watching your money just kind of disappear slowly.
I know.
Even though it's supposed to be safe in the bank.
Right. To understand kind of how we got to this point, you know, where we are now, she takes us back in time.
Uh-huh.
And she kind of contrasts the financial landscape of the past. You know, back when people used savings accounts more and whole life insurance was a bigger thing.
Right.
Home ownership. And now it's all these really complex and risky products that dominate the market.
Yeah. That historical perspective is really important, because if we understand how we got here,
right,
we can see what works, what doesn't work, and maybe find some better ways to do things in the future.
Totally. And then she ties this whole shift to some major historical events, you know, things like the creation of the Federal Reserve,
right,
the Social Security Act,
mm-hmm,
the decline of pensions, the rise of credit cards, the explosion of the mutual fund industry.
All these things have had a huge impact on our lives. You know, how we think about saving, how we think about investing, how we think about retirement.
Absolutely. It's like the whole landscape has changed.
It really has.
And she goes on to highlight how all of these changes have impacted savings rates, retirement expectations, and how vulnerable our pension plans are, you know, both individual and corporate. It's kind of a scary look at what's happening with our financial system right now.
It is. It's really concerning, because people aren't saving as much as they used to. And they're relying more and more on these risky investments to try to fund their retirement.
And then they even include this timeline that leads up to the 2008 crash.
Oh, yeah.
And they talk about the recovery afterwards.
Yeah.
And it's just like this really stark reminder that financial crises happen.
They do.
They're a recurring thing in our history.
It's important to remember that.
It is.
Yeah.
And that timeline is really helpful to understand,
yeah,
you know, like the patterns and the cycles of the financial markets.
It helps us learn from the past,
yeah,
and hopefully avoid making those same mistakes again.
Right.
Or at least be a little bit more prepared,
right,
when the next crisis hits.
And here's where I think it gets really interesting.
Okay.
Kim Butler introduces this whole idea of prosperity economics.
Oh, okay.
Which is a completely different way of thinking about building wealth.
It is. It's like a total paradigm shift.
It is.
From the way most people think about money. And what I find so fascinating about it is that it's based on the principles and strategies that the really wealthy people use.
Yes.
Not just, you know, the average person trying to get by.
It's like they're sharing the secrets.
Yeah.
The wealthy.
It's like, okay, this is how the really successful people do it.
Yeah.
Let's learn from them.
Yeah. So what it's all about is protecting your principal while still growing your wealth.
Yeah.
Using proven vehicles that don't rely on speculation,
right,
or market timing.
You're not trying to time the market.
No.
You're not trying to gamble.
Yeah.
You're trying to build something solid and sustainable.
And ultimately, it's about giving people the power to take control of their own financial destiny.
Exactly. It's about empowerment.
Yeah.
It's about taking ownership of your financial future and making decisions that align with your values and your goals.
And she lays out these seven core principles of prosperity economics that she calls like a roadmap to financial freedom.
Okay.
All right.
I like it.
So you ready to hear what those are?
I'm ready. Lay them on me.
Okay. So the first principle is all about cultivating a prosperous mindset. And it's based on abundance, gratitude, and trust.
Okay.
It's like shifting your perspective from scarcity to possibility.
I love that. That's so important. You know, your mindset really does play a huge role in your financial success.
It does.
If you believe that there's enough for everyone and you approach your finances with a sense of gratitude and trust, you're going to make much better decisions.
Totally. The second principle is about understanding the big picture of your personal economy.
Okay.
It's about seeing how all of your financial choices connect and how you can optimize them to benefit you the most.
That makes sense. It's like a holistic approach to your finances.
Yeah, correct.
You're not just looking at individual things in isolation.
Right.
You're looking at how everything works together.
Exactly. Now, the third principle.
Okay.
This is where it gets a little bit controversial.
Right. I'm intrigued.
Because it challenges that typical advice to always pay cash. She encourages people to think about the real cost of paying cash versus strategic leveraging.
So she's saying debt can be a good thing.
Well, she's saying that it can be a powerful tool.
Okay.
If you use it wisely. It's about understanding how to leverage your assets to create even more wealth.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily like go into debt.
Right.
But it's just saying like, hey,
be smart about it.
Think about it a little differently.
Don't be afraid of it.
Right.
If you use it strategically, it can actually work to your advantage.
Exactly. All right. Principle number four.
Okay.
This one shifts the focus from simply accumulating assets to generating cash flow. So it's about building a sustainable income stream that supports your lifestyle and your goals.
So it's not just about having a big pile of money sitting there doing nothing. It's about making that money work for you.
Exactly.
Generating income.
Yep. The fifth principle is all about maintaining control over your money.
Okay.
It's about not surrendering it to institutions or risky investments. And it's about empowering yourself to make informed decisions.
That's really important. People need to feel like they're in the driver's seat when it comes to their finances.
I agree.
You know, not just handing it over to somebody else and hoping for the best.
Right. All right. So the sixth principle is about keeping your dollars moving through your assets to create momentum and velocity in your personal economy. Think of it like a river. If the water stops flowing, what happens?
It gets stagnant.
Right.
It gets yucky.
Exactly.
Do you want that water to be flowing and moving?
And the same is true with your finances. You want your money to be actively circulating.
Yes.
Generating opportunities and supporting your goals.
Keep it moving.
Keep it moving. And then the seventh and final principle is about making your dollars work harder for you.
Okay.
So it's about making them do multiple jobs, leveraging assets like life insurance and real estate to maximize their potential.
So she's saying, don't just think about these things in a traditional way.
Right.
Think outside the box.
Think outside the box.
Get creative.
Get creative and figure out how you can use them to create multiple streams of income.
Right.
And really build some serious value.
I like it. It's about being resourceful.
Yes.
And maximizing what you've got.
Exactly. So those are the 7 core principles of prosperity economics.
Okay, so we've got this whole new framework.
We do.
Now, how does this actually play out in real life?
Right. So let's dive into some examples of how these principles can be applied in real world situations.
Right. Let's do it.
Okay. Let's talk about college.
Okay.
How to pay for your kids' college education.
Mm-hmm.
Typical advice you always hear, 529 plan, Coverdell account.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the standard advice.
That's
right?
What everybody says.
But Kim Butler, she's got a different perspective.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She's like, think about whole life insurance policies.
Life insurance for college.
I know, right? It's not what you would typically think of. But she makes a really interesting argument. She's like, saving in a whole life policy for your child's education actually offers some pretty significant advantages over those traditional college savings plans.
That's fascinating. So you're using something that's usually associated with death benefits,
right,
as a savings vehicle for education.
Exactly.
I've never heard of that before.
It's pretty cool. So she points out that the cash value in a whole life policy,
mm-hmm,
can be borrowed against tax-free or withdrawn to cover things like tuition and housing and other educational expenses.
Oh, so it gives you some flexibility.
It does.
And control.
It does.
Over those funds.
Yeah, and you can access them when you need them without those restrictions and penalties that come with a lot of those qualified education savings plans.
Yeah, those can be a real pain.
They can.
You know, if you need the money for something else or you change your mind about what you want to study, it's hard to get that money out.
And then another thing that's really cool is that the cash value continues to grow even while it's being used as collateral for a loan.
Yeah.
So it can actually help offset those borrowing costs.
Wow. That's like having your cake and eating it too. So
yeah,
you're using the money for education.
Yes.
But it's still growing.
Yes.
And yeah, potentially generating more income for you.
And she also suggests another strategy, which I think is super creative.
Okay.
You can actually use the funds from a whole life policy as a down payment on a rental property.
Oh, wow.
Near your child's college.
That's brilliant.
I know. Yeah.
So you're turning what's normally an expense, housing,
yes,
into a potential income generating asset.
Yes. So the student could live in one of the units and rent out the others to help offset housing costs.
Uh-huh.
And they're learning about real estate. They're learning about being responsible.
It's like a hands-on financial education.
It is.
While they're getting their degree.
Oh, I love it.
That's fantastic.
I know. It's pretty cool. All right. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk about investing for income. So, you know, as you're getting closer to retirement,
mm-hmm,
a lot of the typical advice is like, okay, start moving your assets into more income producing investments.
Right. Like dividend stocks.
Yes.
Bonds, annuities, that sort of thing.
Yeah. But Kim Butler, she's like, that can actually be really risky.
Really?
Yeah. And it may not give you enough income to actually cover your expenses, especially with inflation going up.
Right.
And, you know, people are living longer these days.
Yeah. That traditional model of just accumulating and then withdrawing later, it just doesn't work as well as it used to.
No.
You're at the mercy of the market.
Yeah.
And you never know what's going to happen.
And so she proposes a different approach.
Yeah.
That focuses on participating whole life insurance policies.
Okay.
And reverse mortgages.
Reverse mortgages. That's interesting.
I know, right?
I don't hear a lot of people talking about those.
No, but she's like, this combination can provide a much more stable and predictable income stream.
That makes sense, especially for people who are retired or close to retirement.
Especially for people who are retired. They don't want to be worrying about the market going up and down. They want that security.
They need that security. They need to know that their income is going to be there.
Exactly.
But then they need it.
So whole life insurance policies,
mm-hmm,
from mutual companies often pay dividends.
Right.
And they can be used to supplement your retirement income.
Right.
And those dividends are tax advantaged.
Okay, so you're getting some tax benefits there.
Yes.
As well as the income.
Exactly.
So it's a win-win.
And then the reverse mortgages,
mm-hmm,
allow homeowners to tap into their home equity without having to sell their home.
Oh, okay.
Or make monthly mortgage payments.
That could be a really valuable tool for seniors.
It could.
Who want to stay in their homes.
Yes.
But they need a little extra cash flow.
Right.
To cover expenses or to just have some fun.
Right.
Travel or whatever they want to do.
Travel, you know, whatever.
Enjoy their retirement.
Right. Enjoy those golden years. So it's all about being creative.
Yeah.
And finding solutions that fit your individual needs.
All right, about.
So when it comes to investing for growth, you know, what's the first thing everybody thinks about?
The stock market, of course.
Of course. But Kim Butler, she's like, whoa.
Hold on a minute.
Hold on a minute. Not so fast.
Really?
Yeah.
She doesn't like the stock market.
Well, she challenges that conventional wisdom that the stock market is the best long-term option for growth.
Interesting.
And she points out that a lot of the wealthiest people in the world, they didn't make their fortunes playing the stock market.
Right. They built businesses.
They built businesses.
They invested in real estate.
They invested in real estate.
They did things differently.
They did things differently. And so she argues that the stock market is just inherently risky.
It is.
And unpredictable.
You never know what's going to happen.
And the fees that are associated with mutual funds and all of that can eat away at your returns.
Yeah, those fees are a silent killer.
They are. They just chip away at your money over time.
They do.
And you don't even realize it.
So she's not saying don't invest in the stock market. She's just saying,
be smart about it.
Be aware of the risks.
Yeah.
Understand what you're getting into.
Don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Exactly. And she emphasizes that there are multiple paths to wealth building.
Absolutely.
And relying solely on the stock market can be a gamble.
Especially if you're trying to preserve your capital.
Especially if you're trying to preserve your capital.
And generate predictable returns, yeah. Which is what most people want.
Most people want.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about saving money.
Okay.
Seems simple enough, right?
You would think so.
You would think so.
What's her take on that?
So she suggests something that a lot of people might find surprising. She thinks that high cash value whole life insurance policies can be a better option than a bank account or a qualified plan.
Hold on a minute. Life insurance as a savings vehicle. Again.
I know, right? She's really challenging the way we think about these things.
She is. She's saying, hey, we need to look at this differently because the cash value in those policies grows tax deferred. It offers liquidity and flexibility.
Okay.
And it can be used for a lot of different things. Emergencies.
Right.
Business investments. Even a down payment on a house.
So it's like a multi-purpose financial tool.
Exactly. It's like your own personal financial safety net.
Yeah.
That provides both protection and opportunity.
I like it.
And it aligns with those principles of control and liquidity and velocity that we were talking about earlier.
It's all coming together.
It is.
It's all connected.
It is all connected.
Yeah.
All right. Last but not least, let's talk about real estate.
Okay.
So typical advice.
Pay off your mortgage as fast as you can.
As fast as you can.
Get rid of that debt.
Right.
Save on interest.
Build equity. But Kim Butler has a different take on this.
Oh, she does. All right. What does she say?
She says that using leverage and strategically managing your mortgage can actually help you build wealth faster.
So she's not against debt.
Not necessarily. She's saying use it to your advantage.
Yeah.
So instead of just pouring all of your extra money into paying off your mortgage, she says invest that money in other assets that generate cash flow.
Okay.
Or appreciate in value.
So you've got your money working for you in multiple ways.
Exactly. It's about creating that dynamic financial ecosystem that we were talking about.
I like it. It's a very different way of thinking about things.
It is.
But it makes sense.
And she shares some really inspiring stories about people who have built a ton of wealth through real estate while still maintaining a manageable mortgage.
So it can be done.
It can be done. It's about shifting your mindset from being debt averse to understanding how to optimize debt.
Okay. So it's not about being afraid of debt.
Right.
It's about respecting it.
Yes.
And using it strategically.
Exactly.
To your advantage.
To your advantage.
I like it.
All right. So those are just a few examples of how prosperity economics can be put into practice.
Yeah. These are great examples.
And it's really about challenging that conventional advice and finding alternative paths to financial freedom that are tailored to your individual needs and goals.
It's about thinking for yourself.
Yes.
Not just blindly following the crowd.
Exactly. So what do you think so far? Does prosperity economics sound like something that could work for you?
You know, it's definitely got me thinking. I'm really intrigued by this whole idea of using leverage and cash flow to build wealth.
Yeah.
Instead of just relying on the stock market or trying to save every penny.
Right. And it's about taking control and creating your own financial destiny.
I like it.
Instead of letting the system dictate what happens to you.
Absolutely. I think it's definitely worth exploring further.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
So stay tuned because in the next part of our deep dive, we're going to go even deeper into prosperity economics. We'll explore some more specific strategies.
Okay.
And we'll look at some real-life case studies of people who have successfully used these principles to build wealth and achieve financial freedom.
Sounds good. I'm ready for more.
Awesome. Well, stick with us and we'll be right back.
All right. Yeah, it really resonates with me, that idea of not being afraid of debt, you know, but using it strategically.
Exactly.
Like you said, respecting it.
Yeah, and understanding how it works. Okay, so let's move on to principle number 6.
Okay.
This one's all about keeping your dollars moving through your assets to create momentum and velocity in your personal economy. Think of it like a river. If the water's not flowing, what happens?
It gets stagnant. It gets kind of gross.
Exactly.
It's not healthy.
And it's the same thing with your finances.
Makes sense.
You want that money to be actively circulating, you know, generating opportunities, supporting your goals.
Keep it moving.
Keep it moving.
Don't let it sit there and collect dust.
Exactly.
All right. What about number 7?
Principle number 7 is all about optimizing your dollars, making them do multiple jobs, leveraging assets like life insurance and real estate to maximize their potential.
So you're saying, don't just think about these things in the traditional way. Think outside the box. Get creative.
Think outside the box. Get creative. Figure out how to use what you have to create multiple streams of income.
Right.
And build some serious value. It's about being resourceful and maximizing what you've got.
I like it. So those are the 7 core principles of prosperity economics.
Those are the 7 core principles. It's a whole new way of thinking about money and building wealth.
It is. So how does this actually work in the real world?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Let's dive into some examples of how these principles can be applied in real life situations.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Let's talk about financing a college education.
Okay. College, big expense for a lot of families.
Huge expense.
Yeah. What's the typical advice you hear?
529 plans, Coverdell accounts, right?
Right. Everyone's always talking about those.
That's kind of the standard advice. But Kim Butler, she has a different perspective. She's like, think about whole life insurance policies.
Life insurance for college. That's not what I would typically think of.
I know it sounds kind of weird.
It does.
But she makes a really compelling argument that saving in a whole life policy for your child's education can actually offer some significant advantages over those traditional college savings plans.
Interesting. So you're using a financial product that's normally associated with, you know, death benefits as a savings vehicle for education.
Exactly. It's not what you would typically think of, but it can be really powerful.
Okay. I'm curious. Tell me more.
So she points out that the cash value in a whole life policy can be borrowed against tax-free.
Okay.
Or you can withdraw it to cover tuition, housing, other educational expenses.
Hmm. So it gives you flexibility and control over those funds.
It does.
You can access them when you need them without all the restrictions and penalties that come with some of those other plans.
And another thing that's really cool is that the cash value continues to grow even while it's being used as collateral for a loan.
Wow. So you're using the money for education, but it's still growing and potentially generating more income for you.
That's the beauty of it. It's like having your cake and eating it too. And then she has another strategy that I think is super creative. She suggests using funds from a whole life policy as a down payment on a rental property.
Oh, wow.
Near the child's college.
So you're turning a traditional expense housing
right.
into a potential income generating asset.
Exactly. The student can live in one of the units.
Okay.
Rent out the others to offset those housing costs. And they're gaining valuable real estate experience along the way.
They are. It's like a hands-on financial education.
Wow, they're getting their degree.
Yeah.
I love it. It's brilliant.
It's fantastic.
Let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about investing for income. As you get closer to retirement,
yeah.
What do you typically hear? Start moving your assets into more income-producing investment.
Right. Dividend stocks, bonds, annuities.
That's the typical advice.
That's what we're always told.
But Kim Butler, she's like, whoa, hold on a minute. That can be really risky.
Really?
And it might not give you enough income to cover your expenses, especially with inflation on the rise.
And people are living longer.
Yeah.
So you need that income to last longer.
You do. So she proposes a different approach.
Okay.
That focuses on participating whole life insurance policies.
Okay.
And reverse mortgages.
Reverse mortgages. Interesting. I haven't heard a lot of people talking about those lately.
They're not as popular, but she's like, this combination can offer a much more stable and predictable income stream.
That makes sense, especially for people who are retired.
Especially for retirees.
They don't want to be worried about the market going up and down every day.
They need that security.
They need to know that their money is going to be there.
Exactly. So whole life insurance policies from mutual companies often pay dividends.
Right.
And those dividends can be used to supplement your retirement income.
Okay, so you're getting some tax benefits there.
Tax advantaged.
As well as the income?
As well as a steady stream of income.
I like it.
And then the reverse mortgages allow homeowners to tap into that home equity without having to sell their home or make monthly mortgage payments.
Wow. So they can stay in their home.
They can age in place.
And still have access to those funds.
Access to those funds. It's a really powerful tool for seniors who want to stay in their homes but need some extra cash flow.
To enjoy their retirement, travel, whatever they want to do.
Whatever they want to do.
That's great. So when it comes to investing for growth, what's the first thing that comes to mind for most people?
The stock market, right.
Of course. It's what we're all told to do.
But Kim Butler, she's like, wait a minute, not so fast.
Really? She's not a fan of the stock market.
She challenges that conventional wisdom that the stock market is the best long-term option for growth. And she points out that many of the wealthiest people in the world, they didn't make their fortunes in the stock market.
Right. They built businesses.
They built businesses. They invested in real estate.
They were entrepreneurs.
They did things differently. She argues that the stock market is inherently risky.
It is very risky. You never know what's going to happen.
And unpredictable, and the fees associated with mutual funds, all of that can really eat away at your returns.
Those fees can be a silent killer.
They can.
Mm-hmm.
So she's not saying don't invest in the stock market at all.
Right.
But she's saying be smart about it. Be aware of the risks.
Understand what you're getting into.
Don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Exactly. Diversify.
Diversify.
And consider other options.
There are multiple paths to wealth building, and relying solely on the stock market can be a gamble.
Especially if you're trying to preserve your capital.
And generate those predictable returns.
Which is what most people want, right? Security and predictability.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've talked about college, investing for income, investing for growth. What about just plain old saving money?
Saving money, yeah. Seems simple enough.
Should be, but it's not always easy.
Right. So Kim Butler, she suggests something that might surprise you. She thinks that high cash value whole life insurance policies.
Whole life insurance again?
Whole life insurance. This time for saving money.
So we're not talking about term life insurance here.
No, we're talking about whole life.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
She thinks that it can be a better option for saving than a traditional bank account or a qualified plan.
Wow, really?
Yeah. And she has some good reasons for thinking that.
Okay, I'm listening.
So the cash value in these policies grows tax deferred.
Mm.
It offers liquidity.
So you can access the money when you need it.
When you need it.
Without penalty.
Without penalty. And you have flexibility.
Okay.
You can use it for a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Emergencies, business investments, even a down payment on a home.
So it's like a multi-purpose financial tool.
It is. It's like having your own personal financial safety net. That provides both protection and opportunity.
That's a great way to think about it.
I think so, too. And it aligns with those principles of control, liquidity, and velocity that are so central to prosperity economics.
It's all connected.
It all ties together.
All right. Last but not least, let's talk about real estate.
Okay. Real estate. What do you think of when you hear real estate investing?
I think about buying properties, renting them out, building equity.
That's the typical approach.
And of course, paying off the mortgage as fast as possible.
Right. Get rid of that debt. Save on interest.
That's what we're always told.
But Kim Butler, she has a different perspective. She thinks that using leverage and strategically managing your mortgage can actually help you build wealth faster.
So she's not anti-debt?
Not necessarily. It's about using debt to your advantage.
Mm.
So instead of pouring all your extra money into paying down your mortgage, she recommends investing those funds in other assets that can generate cash flow or appreciate in value.
Interesting. So you're making your money work harder for you.
You're creating a more dynamic financial ecosystem. And she shares some inspiring stories about people who have built significant wealth through real estate while still maintaining a manageable mortgage.
So it can be done.
It can be done. It's about shifting your mindset from being debt averse to debt optimization.
That's a good distinction.
It is. It's about recognizing that debt can be a powerful tool for wealth creation.
When used strategically.
When used strategically.
And responsibly, of course.
Absolutely. These examples show how prosperity economics principles can be applied in real-world situations, challenging conventional advice and offering alternative paths to financial freedom.
Yeah, it's all about thinking outside the box and finding what works best for you.
Exactly. It's about empowering yourself to take control of your financial future and create a life of abundance and prosperity.
I like it. I think it's a message that a lot of people need to hear.
I agree. So stay tuned, because in the next part of our deep dive, we're going to go even deeper into prosperity economics.
Okay.
We'll explore some more specific strategies and look at some real-life case studies of people who have successfully used these principles to build wealth and achieve financial freedom.
Sounds good. I'm ready for more. It's definitely a different way of looking at things. You know, it's not the traditional approach.
It's not. But it's really about flipping that script.
Yeah.
You know, and thinking about, instead of just chasing returns in the stock market,
yeah, right,
you're building that solid foundation
mm-hmm.
with cash flow and smart leveraging and, you know, assets like real estate and life insurance.
Yeah, those things that are more tangible
yes.
and predictable.
So what are your thoughts on this whole approach?
Yeah.
Does it resonate with you at all?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely makes you think.
It does.
You know, it's like a breath of fresh air. It's like, okay, there's another way to do this.
Right. Yeah.
It's not just about scarcity and trying to scrape by
yeah.
and, you know, putting all your faith in the stock market.
Yeah.
It's about abundance.
Right.
It's about taking control.
Yeah.
It's about creating a system that works for you,
yeah.
not for Wall Street.
And those seven principles. You know, think, see, measure, flow, control, move, and multiply.
Mm-hmm.
Those aren't just kitschy phrases.
Yeah, they're not.
They're actual steps that you can take.
They're actionable.
Yes.
You can actually do something with them.
Yes, absolutely. And the examples that we talked about today, you know, using whole life insurance for education.
Right.
Generating income through dividends and reverse mortgages.
Yeah.
Building wealth through real estate. Those are all practical ways to put these principles into action.
Yeah, you can actually see how they work in the real world.
It can.
It's not just theory.
It's not just theory.
It's actually happening.
So as you're moving forward on your own financial journey,
yeah.
think about, you know, are you relying too heavily on the stock market?
Mm-hmm.
Are you overlooking the power of leverage and cash flow?
Are you giving away too much control?
Are you giving up control of your money to institutions or advisors?
Right. Those are great questions to ask yourself.
They are.
You know, really sit down and think about it.
Yeah.
Am I doing what's best for me?
Yeah.
Or am I just doing what everybody else is doing?
Yeah, those are all good questions.
Yeah. And I think the main takeaway here is that the traditional model
yeah.
of financial planning.
It's not always.
May not be the best way to go.
It may not be. There are definitely alternative paths out there.
There are.
That emphasize stability and control. And long-term value creation.
And prosperity economics gives you a really solid framework for achieving those goals.
It does.
It's about aligning your mindset,
right.
your actions, and yeah. your strategies.
To create that life of abundance.
To create the life that you want.
Yes.
Not the life that somebody else tells you you should have.
Exactly. But here's a final thought for everyone to kind of ponder.
Okay.
True prosperity, it goes beyond just money.
It does.
About your health.
It's about your relationship.
Your relationships, your purpose, your overall well-being.
It's about living a rich and meaningful life.
Yes.
In every sense of the word.
In every sense of the word. So think about how you can apply
mm-hmm.
these principles of prosperity economics to other areas of your life.
That's a great challenge.
It is.
You know, how can we create that sense of abundance and fulfillment in all aspects of our lives?
I think that's a great point to end on.
I do too.
You know, it's not just about financial wealth. It's about creating a truly rich and meaningful life.
Absolutely.
So thank you all for joining us on this deep dive.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
And we hope that this has empowered you to take control of your financial future.
And create a life that you love.
And create a life that you love.
Hey.